perception. And I suppose the title of the talk would be, what do I see? And who sees it? Start with a very beautiful quote from the Sutta Nipata, and it's just a short quote, but it really tells us what this whole path is about. And it's, for some people, contact, the point where senses an object meet, is enthralling, is intoxicating, makes you drunk, this is exciting. And so they are washed by the tides of being, by the tides, drifting along an empty, pointless road. Heavy. But others come to understand their sense activity. And because they understand it, stillness fills them with delight. And it's a beautiful quote. So just what we were saying about Thomas Metzinger, to understand the senses when they are operating brings you to stillness and joy. And that's really the subject of the talk. To understand the senses and not to be automatic about them, that is transparent, that we just see the world and us and we believe there's the world, there's me. No reflection on what it is we do when we see, feel, touch, hear, taste, think. So perception, second aggregate, sanya, is tvisa, I suppose, but it is to sense and also to make sense. It's not just the bare sensing, it also includes distinguishing things from one thing from another, havchana, recognition, litfos, to grasp, this is a bell. In the Dharma there is 6 senses, not 5. And the 6, there's the 5 senses, seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching. And the 6th is mental content that arrives, like memory, thought, music, color, whatever. And it's also regarded as raw material that arrives into the being. The raw material, the 6th sense, even if it's mental sense, we think we're in control of it. And we're not in control of watching a car go past, but it's not so different. It's not so different. It's also seen as one of the senses coming into the being. And each sense, the sense organ itself, like the eye, is rupa, is part of the form of the human being, is formed. And it has, each sense has a field, and this is Dharma and science, that we don't see beyond ultrasagol. So we have a very limited amount of see. We don't see radio waves, we don't see gamma rays, we see only a very small vision. These organs here just have a very small slice of reality, and each of our senses is a very, very small slice of reality, and we have no idea about the rest. So, and we don't know how small it is either. We have no idea how small this slice is, because we don't know what else is in the great cosmos. So it's a very, so they're called fields, sadot or whatever. And the other thing to understand, and this is also needs reflection, is that the organ is built because of the field. Like light builds the eye. The eye is an organ to detect the light, but the light creates the eye, conditions the eye, because of a certain wavelength of the light, it builds the eye that sees that wavelength. If there was an interest for human beings for millions of years to look at radio, we would have a radio antenna here. Or television, actually, probably we should have TV antenna. There will be a odd million years of human evolution, we'd all have television areas built. But this is already paticca samuppada. There isn't a thing called an eye that we happen to have that just then looks for light. The light makes the eye, and the eye then sees the light. The two are built co-creation, not a god creating an eye and then looking around and say, oh, what can I see? But co-creation, light creating eye, eye seeing light, light and eye building each other in the universe through contact.
The kolrega or originally?
No, I mean originally, and in a way kolrega gam, because if you don't, if a light, if an eye doesn't see any light, it doesn't function anymore. It won't function. It doesn't know how to function. It's developing itself through Vigamba Kolrega.
And when you look at mother, the light creates the eye.
I read once a very interesting book about Egyptian mythology and spirituality. When they worship the sun, and the sun coming up every morning, there was a poem, an ancient Egyptian poem saying, thank you for the sun that arises and whose light has created my eyes. And it's like our senses are built by the organism that is responding to the world. The world makes you. You're made from carbon and nitrogen. You're made Ephrat, Stephen. We're created by the world, as part of the world. So one part of the world called light is creating eyes. You can say evolution, or you can say now, or you can say in many ways.
Are we talking now about physical organs?
I'm talking about co-creation, that things create each other. So the physical eye, yes, is created by light.
And is that kashur la perception?
Because the perception runs the eye. Everything is codependent, mm-hmm. and conditioned, because it's also in function and also in creation of the organ, and also in the act, the moment of perception. Mm-hmm. Light makes the eye work. The eye is there to litfosita, or the light activates the eye. So one is impossible without the other. You can't imagine an eye without light is nothing. You can throw it in the rubbish bin. Light without an eye doesn't have any seeing in it. So the
but
two.
What happens if you meta medam shochev or tenta einay and medamien tmona? So gamre ya.
Ken. Nachon.
As namorot she nagid achshata b'choshek.
Okay. כן.
איפה הפרספשן ואיפה...
אוקיי, כן, אבל אוקיי, אני אדבר על זה עכשיו. So, there are other elements of the aggregates in this process of seeing something in the world, litfos mashu, it needs other aggregates as well, because you need consciousness to be able to distinguish a bell from a clock. So when you say, I see a bell, it's maybe the dominant aggregate is perception, but in there is consciousness, in there is memory, in there is other things too. So they all join together, and there is a quote in the chapter that I asked you to read, chapter 5, which is a question someone asked the Buddha, are the aggregates separate from each other? Can they be separated? And the Buddha said, actually they are not separate from each other, they are joined together, like everything in the world. It's like, where as soon as you try and separate out things, you're actually against, you're running against something very basic, which is the co-creation of everything, depending on everything else. So yes, you can say there are aggregates, but no, they're not isolated, separate things. And when I was on my retreat, this whole course on aggregates was because when I was on my retreat for period last year, it got to me, this question of the aggregates. I started to meditate and question the aggregates inside me, and I was really trying hard to separate them out in terms of my own awareness, and I couldn't. I mean, I could to some extent. I said, okay, this is perception, 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 but they're always spilling over to other things because they're lishpoch, you know. They were always into, and So there is the aggregates are connected with each other. And what happens when we have a perception is the usual mind begins to develop chains of reactions, thinking, and papancha. Papancha is processing. And the processing makes the world as we know it. So it stays, it keeps the world, it keeps me and the world in belief. I am here and there is the world. And so it's the chains of processing that keep sustaining the belief in the world and in sankharas, if you like, or forms. And so we have to begin to challenge, firstly, that the senses are not reliable. Well, everyone knows that. You more or less learn it in school. It's nothing big to understand that the senses are kind of unreliable. There's all these stories, like in classic Indian Vedic story of the snake and the rope, someone going into a room, see there are coiled, and because of conditioning we'll say that's a snake and run out, but maybe it's just a piece of rope. And we're always projecting onto the world our pre-assumptions, pre-beliefs, and mostly our fears. And we're always seeing things in illusion. There are always illusions going on. We're always seeing spiders. I don't like spiders, so I see them a lot of places. I keep seeing spiders, and they're not spiders, but because I don't like spiders very much. So. I caught a tarantula the other day, big one, mamash, in Kleel, and I forced myself to look at it. I caught it in a box, a glass, but it was a really big black spider. And my daughter and I, we looked at it, we said, look, let's meditate on this spider. We just sit with it and be with it. And I put a glass under and a glass on top so we could see it all around, and we could just, so we're trying to become intimate with the spider to get our, out of our fears, as Tamarin and myself. That was a couple of days ago. But we, the senses are unreliable, and it's very hard to find out what that means. To what really do, what is it that we really see? There is a quote from Wittgenstein that said, it looks as if the sun is going round the earth, but we know it's the earth turning. How would it look if it looks as if the earth is turning? How would it look to us if it was, if it was right? That's at the beginning of Thomas's book. Yeah, I mean, it's just challenging us to say, you know, okay, how do we know the end of illusion? We cannot know how, where the, where illusion stops. Yeah, exactly. It's a koan. And philosophers know about this. This is not the territory only of Dharma, of course. Philosophers, Western philosophers, have been talking about it endlessly. When I was at Oxford, because a load of Western philosophers were in Oxford, and they were wandering around the courtyards and the colleges that I was also wandering around, and asking the same questions. And Berkeley said, you know, the senses don't tell us anything. The only thing I know is God. Because all the senses are so unreliable that only God is left. Which is fine. I mean, it's just, it's... And but I think it's important to take one message from the West, to understand something about the Western mind here, and not only the Western mind, that in the unreliability of the senses, so we find refuge in abstract and in the kameha, the longing for some pure truth, clean truth. And it occupies half the human race in looking for clean, pure truth that is not the senses. For example, mathematics. For example, the ideal of Plato, Aplaton, the ideal forms, perfect or pure forms, or Pythagoras, pure sound and scales that are in the world, or in science, the laws, the ultimate laws of nature. All of these are kind of refuges. You can look at them as a sort of refuge or idols that are created because of the pain. Underneath, well, the dukkha in the Dharma language of my senses don't tell me the world. And therefore I'm looking for some, and that's where the Buddha comes in and says, don't do that. Instead of that, look at the senses rather than try and develop gods called pure God, pure being, ultimate, the Mashiach, a Mathematica.
It's also a sense, if you're Buddha.
Success. It's the same thing, exactly.
It's not different.
Exactly.
It's abstract thinking, it's just
exactly.
Creating its own.
Exactly. So you're doing exactly, you're making a.
It's not reliable just as.
Exactly.
It's impermanent.
Yeah, exactly. So the Dharma comes from in another place completely. The Buddha was so, you know, and I hope that you get this from reading the chapter, because there's so many good quotes there. The Buddha comes in so insistent, don't get sidetracked or lost into developing more belief systems in ideals, in perfection, in ultimacy that is needs a belief in God, other gods, in mathematics, in whatever. They're not ultimate, they're just what you say. They're, instead of that, look at the perception itself, what it is we do when we see. Science, and Metzinger I think it'd be very helpful if you read the quote, the interview with the Metzinger that Sarit sent around to everybody. I didn't read it. Muli, you sent it. Yeah, I think it's good to read it, but you know, obviously with Muli's right that it not necessarily either, but it's good, it's helpful that also to make the integration between Dharma and the Western view or science, so that we're not living in two major different universes and so on, but to make the integration a bit. And Metzinger and other scientists, of course, all show that we cannot really know the world, that we only can know appearances, shadows, like in the Aplaton metaphor image of the cave. We can only ever know shadows of the world. We can never really know what the world is. And it's like living in a dream world. And all we can really know is ionim in the brain. The ion plus minus, that's all we have. We don't have anything else. We don't know anything else. Even that we don't know. The scientists will tell us. And what's an ion? Ionim. So we have electrical impulses in the brain, and then we say, oh, that's a world. What's a world? And if we forget a world, or if we get, you know, if we have Alzheimer, if we sleep, if we this, if that. So we're in a dream world, and the world is being created in me because of the habit of karma, if you like. The world is in me. I am the world. I am making the world. The world is made. Like in this quote from Achan Cha on Friday, where Achan Cha said, in a moment of stillness, there is absolute quiet and stillness. And then the minute the mind moves anywhere, that moment the total world appears and is created. And in the stillness there is without it. And then the moment... So there was an interesting discussion in the IDC day of scientists and Dharma. Rafi Malach, I think he was talking, did a lot of research in the Weizmann Institute, showing the way that the brain is constantly making the world by itself. There are cells in Ta'ei Moach that are just keep making trees. Trees, 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 trees. This tree, that tree, that tree, that tree. That every tree you've ever seen is being constantly recreated in the brain, even while you're asleep. And that then, when you see a tree, it confirms it, or changes it a bit, or checks it, according to what's generated inside. So that the brain is dynamic for creation of the world in background, bereka, while we just be, while we just are alive. And that's what he discovered, and he wrote some articles on that, and that was, he was giving a talk, and I was coming at the other side, the Dharma side. We didn't really communicate, I must say. not that it wasn't very successful. Can I maybe just carry on for a few minutes, all right? And then we'll take a break, and then we can have some more questions. Do you mind? I just want to keep the flow for a few more minutes. But the fact is that the illusion creates suffering, and that's the emphasis of the Buddha all the time. When asked philosophical questions, he said, but the problem is suffering. But if we live in a world of illusion, of a dream world, where we think we exist, the world exists, everything is frozen, we are different from the world, we are separate from the world. The world, ki'ilu, exists, it's an enchantment or a spell. Then we are locked in a box called me, and the world is out there called the world, and that constant suffering. So that it's not just that we are missing the truth, it's that we are in pain from this. And the pain is because we can't manage the world. The world is managing us. The world is killing us. The world is changing us. The world is doing harm to us. The world is hurting us. We are in battle with the world in some way. We are constantly trying to find the world. We are lost. We are lonely. We are dependent. We are needy. We are hungry. All of this, and we missed our joy, and we missed the infinite, the bliss, the joy of being part of being totally with the world. And so there is a pain in this. And the solution to the pain is to see the way, the interconnection between the senses, how the senses work, how the consciousness works, how everything comes together, how the world is made by my senses and consciousness, how the world therefore is, and me are one. We are constantly making the world. There's no separation out there of a world and me. We are together. And that's something that isn't concept, you can't conceive it. It doesn't work if you try and think it out. It needs dropping into it, because early Paul needs to let go into that, ending the struggle of me against the world. And that's why when we're talking about senses, chushim, then the path is to ask, what is it I see? In the framework of senses, the aggregate of senses, what is it? What's happening when I see? What's happening? What is seeing? What is a thing that I apparently see? The whole of the Zen path of Dharma is meant to be rooted in one event, which I don't know, you probably know the sutta, but I don't know the sutta, where the Buddha held up a flower. Do you know which sutta it is? It's not the Pali. Okay. So anyway, that's the mythology. The Buddha didn't answer, but held up a flower. And from there comes the whole, in a way, chain of, at least they trace back, the Zen path trace it back. And the Zen is full of this kind of inquiry. What is it? What is it that I see? What is this thing? Like the answers of Zen masters to some cosmic questions is likely to be pile of cow shit or something like that. There's quite a funny story, true story, that there was a Zen master and a Tibetan teacher in front of a big crowd in Harvard University, and there was a Zen teacher and the Tibetan Rinpoche, and the Zen teacher took out an orange and held it up like that and said, "What is this?" And he kind of said it more or less to initiate a dialogue with the Rinpoche, and then no answer. "What is this?" No answer. "What is this?" No answer. And then the Rinpoche turned to his translator and said a few words. And the translator said to the audience, maybe they don't, they've never seen oranges in Japan.
It's a true story.
It's a true story, yeah. So the whole emphasis on questioning. Questioning. What is this? Is actually what we do in our meditation. Even if we sit and watch the breath, and it's not dressed up as a Zen question, but it is a Zen question. Because you can't watch the breath for days and days sitting on the meditation cushion and not challenge in some way what is happening, asking the question, what is going on? Me and the breath, and people do have insights. Who's in charge? Breaking it down, looking at the experience of meeting just a simple thing called me and the breath, rather than putting it on automatic and being on the automatic, me and the world. I'll read Nagarjuna, because Nagarjuna really, the poems, and as I said before, in the translation is very nice of Stephen Batchelor, it really gives you a sense of how directly you can ask the questions on what it is I see. And there is one of his poems on seeing. And we can just sort of let these questions actually touch us, not just intellectually, but let us be confused, okay? Lost. Get lost. If my eyes cannot see themselves, how can they see something else? But if there isn't a trace of something seen, how could I see at all? Neither seeing nor not seeing see anything. Seeing shows a seer, or reveals a seer, who is neither separate from nor not separate from seeing. How could you see, and what would you see, in the absence of a seer, someone who sees? Just as a child is born from father and mother, so consciousness comes out from eyes and colorful shapes. Without these eyes, how could I know consciousness, or contact, or feeling, or craving, or evolving, or birth, or aging, or death? In other words, he's saying, the moment of seeing, the eyes are the initial step in paticca samuppada, the creation of the world at every moment. Seers seeing sights also explain hearers hearing sounds, smellers smelling smells, tasters tasting tastes, touchers touching textures, and thinkers thinking thoughts. It's the same for every sense. So challenge is also the clinging that creates subject and object. Subject is not me, and the world are fictions, are illusions. And this duality is constantly created by our belief and by our not seeing seeing, not knowing knowing. Krishnamurti had a very beautiful quote. He says, the entire tragedy of human existence lies between subject and object. That's very nice. Okay, so I think I'll stop there for a break, and the second part of my talk, when we come back after tea, will be really details about how we practice with this. How we practice, and what it is that we see when we don't see the world out there and me inside. What does it look like when we are together, me and the world? How does it feel to be in the world as one? And how do we practice in more detail with this, with perception? what is the practice of perception? So I'll go into that when we come back from tea. Okay. Thanks.